What it do, baby? Yes, sir. It's the Zoo Yorker. And that means one thing and one thing only. I am your host, Big Zoo, a.k.a. Ed R. Zoom, and coming to you here on April 27, 2024. That happens to be a Saturday, baby, so make sure you are enjoying it. Get your ass outside. Do whatever the hell makes you happy, because it is the weekend, so get your freak on. And if you're feeling real freaky, like I'm talking real freaking naughty, make sure to hit that subscribe and follow button up top so you get notified every time we drop a new episode of the podcast. And like I said, if you're feeling real freaky right now, maybe you leave a 5-star review for me. You like the voice, you're just feeling real nice in this moment. If you leave a 5-star review, I really appreciate it. It gets more eyes onto the podcast. It helps people see what we're doing over here, and I just appreciate it. And I appreciate you guys being here. And if you got anything to say to me, anything at all, hit me up on that X machine, on that Elon Musk machine, on that Twitter machine, at ZooBeard77. Let me know what you think about this Knicks Sixers series. Let me know what you think about this Rangers team, Mets, Yankees. Just say hi, you know, whatever it is that you're feeling in that moment. I'm here for you, my friends. And I mentioned them right there, but I need to get into this New York Rangers team because they win again last night, 3-1. They are now up 3-0 in this series with the Washington Capitals in this first-round matchup, which I said the Rangers should sweep in 4 games. And now here we are on the verge with Sunday night at 8 o'clock being game 4 of the Rangers pulling off a nice little 4-game sweep. Now, depending on what happens today with the Canes and the Isles out at UBS, this sweep might be more important than you can even imagine. Because if Carolina is able to win, Carolina has swept the Isles and they are through to the second round, where they are sitting on their asses and waiting for the winner of the Rangers and the Capitals. So remember when I said the Rangers needed to sweep this series so they could be sitting on their asses waiting to see who wins that Isles-Canes series? Well, the Isles never showed up to that series, so there's a chance that the Carolina Hurricanes are sitting waiting around for the New York Rangers and getting a bunch of rest if the Rangers are not able to sweep this series on Sunday. And that is a disaster scenario for this Rangers team, because if they have to sit there on Wednesday night and play a game versus this Capitals team who is being physical and aggressive, and although the Rangers are significantly better than them, they are putting hits on them. And not, I don't mean like in a dirty way, I just mean that's the game of hockey. They're going back and forth, they're playing a physical style, it's wearing. If you played 6 games with them, it would wear you out. The Rangers have to finish this series on Sunday night. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. It has to be done that way. And what happened last night, a nice 3-1 win. I see a lot of fans talking about how it was very ho-hum, how Igor had to carry the way for the most part. You know what? That's what I want to see every once in a while in the playoffs, because you have to win in a variety of ways. And one of those ways can be a boring, nondescript win. And I feel like most of the time when we're watching these playoff games, we're watching intense back and forth, going at it all the way to the final whistle, into overtime, whatever it is. You don't get to see too many games where a team is, you know, just able to kind of do their thing most of the night, get their goals, and go on to the next. That was the Rangers. And that is something beautiful, beautiful for my eyes to see, at least, because every time I see a Ranger playoff game, it is scrappy. It is intense. It is sitting on the edge of your seat and worrying about every single possible scenario. Or it's fighting back from a deficit and trying to get back into the game. That's nothing. Nothing like last night was. And that's a good thing. That's a very, very good thing, because you know what that means? That means that this team is better than Washington, significantly better than Washington. They can take it, I mean, not easy, but they're able to play a bad game or a mediocre game or an average game and they're able to cook a team 3-1 to a point where they can sit back in the third period and defend and just be themselves and not have to worry about pressing and not have to worry about overexerting themselves and not have to worry about doing anything stupid that could lead to an injury or could lead to a guy getting suspended. They're able to just play the game of hockey and allow it to come to them. It's a beautiful thing to see, because when you have to always be on the press, when you have to always be pushing, it wears you out. It wears you out after a while, especially a team that is aging like the Rangers. I know there are a lot of young pieces to this team, a lot of very young pieces to this team, but a lot of the most important guys are in their 30s. You don't need to overexert those guys in the first round. I love it. I love it. I would love to see a blowout in game 4. But I don't get greedy. I don't care, because the goal of this series is to sweep. That is the only goal of the first round, is to sweep it. The ultimate milestone is to just get through. But the goal is to sweep so that you can get a little bit of rest, a solid amount of rest, before that second round begins. And the less games you play in the Stanley Cup playoffs, the better that is for you winning the Stanley Cup when it's all said and done. The next round, which is clearly going to be against Carolina, because we don't see 3-0 comebacks anywhere in sports. So when Carolina ultimately finishes that series with the Isles, and it is Rangers, Hurricanes, you need to have as much rest and as little gameplay and as little hits in the playoffs on your body as humanly possible. That's going to be, that's just going to be a series. You're probably going to get 6 or 7 games. You're probably going to get a lot of physicality. You're probably going to see a lot of up and down the ice skating on each other, trying to put it in the back of the net. It's going to be an absolute war. And you want to be able to prepare for that. You want to be able to get some time for that. And you certainly don't want that other team in that scenario, that other incredibly talented team, to have time to prepare for you. You don't want them to have the significant amount of time in terms of rest. You can't let that happen. So now, because of the Isles' inability to win a game, and let's see, there is still one more today at UBS. Hopefully Isles fans are showing up, although I could understand why you wouldn't. But it could be your team's last home game of the season, and it's in the playoffs. So I say, if you're free, it's a Saturday afternoon, go over, check out the Isles game at UBS, cheer your boys on, try to get them a win so that you don't lose at home. You know, never lose a series at home. That's the way I look at it. If you can prevent it, prevent it. And then hopefully the Isles are able to do that, because it also helps out the Rangers in that scenario. But it also prolongs that series. And potentially, you know what? Maybe the Isles could be the first 3-0 team to come back. You never know. I doubt it. But we're talking about the New York Rangers right now. And I mentioned the impressiveness of this team, that they're able to win in such an abundance of ways, such a variety of ways. And I think the most impressive thing about it right now is that they are not relying on anyone. They're not relying on any one line. They are playing a full team game at this point, and their power play and special teams in general, their power play kill has been phenomenal. I mean, you're talking about a group that has now 2 shorthanded goals and are going off on the power play at this point in the playoffs. So it's nice to see them winning in a way where they are not relying on their superstars, and they are able to control games so well that, honestly, it doesn't even feel like the playoffs half of the time. And I know I might regret saying that, and I keep talking about teams coming back from 3-0 deficits, and that's exactly where the Rangers and Caps sit right now. But I just don't have any fear in this series. I think there's still a game where you're going to get Panarin showing up big time, or you're going to get Zibanejad showing up big time, or you're going to get a Kreider hat trick. And I think that just puts it away. I have no fear. No fear with this team. I've said it before. I'll say it all throughout this postseason run, all the way until they hoist the cup at the end. I fully expect and I fully believe that this Rangers team will be the ones hoisting the Stanley Cup in June. Now, they've done everything that they could possibly do so far in the first round, up 3-0. Now, complete the goal, finish the job, and sweep the series on Sunday night. Continue the push to the Stanley Cup, because you have a team that is sitting on the other side of you in Carolina Hurricanes who are doing the exact same thing. So don't take Sunday for granted and come out and finish it off in four. About last night. Oof. It's a little early. My voice isn't really ready to go. You know, it's there's a lot of excuses I could use right now as to why that was so bad. But I appreciate you all not checking out and still hanging in there, because we got a little bit to talk about from last night. And why don't we start off with those baseball teams? Because these New York Yankees, man, I keep trying to defend this lineup. I keep trying to give them breaks and benefits of the doubt. And then they do things like lose to the A's 3-1. They do things like show up in Milwaukee and put a game all the way into extra innings. And then in the 11th inning, they can't drive in the ghost runner off second base. And for those of you that have no idea what a ghost runner is, because I know some people aren't baseball fans that listen to this, the ghost runner is a free runner that they put on second base at the start of every extra inning in order to make the games go quicker. Obviously, to determine a winner, presumably, correct? The Yankees now, for I don't even know, this has to at least be the third or fourth time they've done this, have been unable to drive in this ghost runner. And it really is the difference between winning and losing these games, and it's not up for debate. I mean, as soon as you don't drive in that runner on the top of the inning, you are pretty much guaranteed a loss in the bottom of the inning. Because now all they have to do, all the other team has to do, is get that guy over to third base one way or the other. They don't just have to bunt him. They could ground out to the right side of the infield. They could fly out to the right fielder. They do not have to just bunt. I hate that idea too. Oh, so guys can't bunt, so that's why they can't get him over. No. No, there are a lot of ways you can get a guy over from second to third. And the Yankees need to start figuring that out, because if they keep losing these extra inning games because guys are not competent enough to drive runners in and to get guys over and to play smart baseball at the plate, then this team is screwed. I mean, what are we doing? These are some of these guys in this lineup are supposed to be high IQ guys, and all they do is constantly fail. It's April, and it's early, and, you know, I'm still hanging my hat on the fact this team's not losing a ton of series, but, you know, you just split one with one of the worst teams in all of baseball and one of the worst teams that we will see on a professional baseball field for the next, I don't know, probably 25 years. It's pathetic what the Oakland A's are right now. And to split a series with them at home is honestly disgraceful. But you split it. You didn't lose. So there is a redemption there. But you cannot by any means follow up a pathetic offensive showing in that series by being unable to drive in the ghost runner in this one. And to at least prolong the game a little bit. It'll give at least a little bit of hope to your fans, to your team, to everybody there. Because after a while, it gets old. After a while, you stop believing. And this is a new Yankee team with a new feel around it. Juan Soto's here. if they allow themselves to dip into that same ugly, ugly team that took over the Bronx last year, well, then Juan Soto is going to walk his ass right on out of Yankee Stadium and probably take it over to Citi Field, because Stevie Moneybags is going to be dumping a load of cash on Juan Soto's head. So the Yankees drop game one of that series, 7-6 to the Brewers. Brewers improved to 17-8. Yankees drop 17-10. I mean, you got Rodon on the mound. You have to win tonight. That's just how it is for the Yanks. I don't care. I don't care. I don't need to hear any excuses. This lineup needs to show up, and you need to win this game. Period. End of sentence. Because I mentioned that team in Queens that's going to be coming hard for your superstar at the end of the year. Well, they did take an L last night. They lose 4-2 to the Cardinals at home, the Mets. This was the debut game for one J.D. Martinez, who finally, after a month and a couple of weeks, maybe a month and a half or so, of trying to get himself healthy, of being injured, he has finally finally made his debut into this Mets lineup, and he goes 2-for-4 last night, drives in a run. From J.D. Martinez's perspective, this is great. I think it's going to be a great addition for this lineup. You get another professional hitter in there to help out, even if it's not just him. He's talking with young guys like Beatty. He's talking with young guys like Alvarez. He's helping out guys like Pete Alonso take that next step, hopefully. And he's just being a calming factor for a lineup that could really use one more big power bat. And even if he's not slugging 40 homers, even if he's not slugging 30 homers, if he's able to just put a little drive into the ball and provide some protection for Pete Alonso, the Mets will already have their best lineup in the Pete Alonso era. So, great to see J.D. Martinez out on the field. This is going to be an interesting one tonight, though. Mets do need to bounce back. Cardinals are not a good team. Not a good team at all. I guess they would probably say that about the Mets, though, as well. But the reason tonight is a must win, outside of the fact you want to get back in the win column, and it hasn't been exactly the best run in the last five games. But you want to get these City Connect uniforms debuted with a W. I mean, you don't want everybody looking at these things as a bad luck charm, kind of like we started to look at the black jerseys over the past couple of seasons. You want everybody staring at these things and going, okay, we need these to be on every single game. You want this jersey to be synonymous with winning. And it would be nice to do that. I mean, I don't think anything with the Mets will ever be synonymous with winning, but you know what? Maybe this jersey could be. I doubt it, though. I doubt it. But that debuts tonight, 4 o'clock. Get a chance to go to the game. Go check it out in person. If you can't, check it out on TV. Tweet me your thoughts on all of those jerseys. I mean, I'm going to have my thoughts when I actually see them on the field. So follow me on Twitter to see my fashion thoughts on the Mets uniforms for today, as well as everything else going on in the sports world at ZooBeard77, ZOOBEARD77. Quickly, I want to touch on the NFL draft and the second round here from last night, where the Giants might have had the steal of the draft, in my opinion. This young man, Tyler Newbin, that they selected out of Minnesota, and I said Newbin, not Newman, just to make sure everybody knows, N-U-B-I-N, he is going to be an absolute superstar at this level. I remember watching him play a couple of games early in the season, and I mean, I'd seen him in the past a little bit with Minnesota, but watching him earlier this year, just seeing him as that ball hawk, seeing how he has a nose to just get around a play and just make something happen. He is a guy, he's not a home run hitter type of player either. He's a guy who makes all the small gritty plays as well. This is about as good of a pick the Giants could have made here. And when you are looking to replace somebody like Xavier McKinney, who is probably one of the best safeties in the league right now. You go out and you draft a kid who will be one of the best safeties in the league come two seasons from now. And I will guarantee, I will put everything I got on the line to say that Tyler Newbin will be that guy. He is that dude. He's built like that. Trust me. Trust me. And Giant fans, you are going to fall in love with this young man over the next couple of seasons. Expect great things from Tyler Newbin. And then in the third round, the Giants go with Andrew Phillips out of Kentucky at corner. 5'11", 190 pounds. Now, I'd be lying to you if I told you I saw a ton of Kentucky play this year. But just judging off of some of the highlights I've seen from this young man and reading a couple of the reports on him, seems like he's going to be developed into a slot corner, which, hey, when you're the Giants and you're rebuilding that secondary, you need everything possible. So you get a slot corner, you stick him right in there, right next to right with Tyler Newbin, and you all of a sudden have a couple of revamped people, young men in that secondary who are going to do great things for this franchise moving forward. But I definitely don't expect to see as much of him early on in the season as I would expect to see of Newbin. So I think Phillips is a guy who probably by the end of the year you're seeing a lot, maybe getting starts and whatnot, but I don't think they're going to force feed him in there like they did to Deontay Banks last year. And I think Deontay Banks is going to be better for being fed in there to the Wolves immediately. But when you're a third rounder as opposed to a first rounder, you want to give them a little bit of time, a little bit of a cushion to just kind of get their feet under them and to come up to speed a little bit. There's a reason they're a third rounder and they weren't a first rounder. It's more likely to do with their NFL readiness. So when you look at a kid like Phillips, I would say view him as a developmental piece who by the end of the year you should start to see playing. Don't view him like Tyler Newbin. Tyler Newbin is going to be an all-pro level player. I'm just saying it right now. I'll put everything on it. The other team in town who is having a very interesting draft, the Jets are. Joe Douglas, in the biggest draft of his career probably, has come away with an offensive tackle in Olufoshana, who I love. I think that is a great move for the franchise in the future. And now, they did not have a second-round pick and were not able to trade into the second round, which is something they were desperate to do. But they were able to come away with the first round and the third pick after trading with the Carolina Panthers, and they got their guy, Malachi Corley, out of Western Kentucky. And again, I'd be lying to you if I told you I saw a ton of Western Kentucky play football this season. But what I do know is that Malachi Corley has led the NCAA, not just his conference, not just his team, the NCAA, in yards after catch, a little yak, which, if you're not too familiar with the stat, what that means is that when he gets the ball in his hand, he makes things happen. When you throw it to him, he's got the speed, he's got the agility, and he's got the smarts to get around people and make guys miss. The Jets need guys like that. They already have Garrett Wilson. They already have Mike Williams. They already have Tyler Conklin and Ruckert and Breece Hall. They need another guy in there who can just, hey, here's a little pitch out to the outside. Let's see what you could do with it. Hey, here's a little screen pass. Let's see what you could do with it. Because Garrett Wilson, yeah, he can make some big plays happen, but that's not truly his game. The Jets needed a playmaker in this draft, and they got one. And we'll see how he develops. He needs to hit the ground running for this team, so that's going to be very important. But I think he will. You get a guy like Aaron Rodgers who is going to be busting his ass all summer long. I expect this kid to do great things. I expect them to use him as a gadget guy. And hopefully with 3 fourth-round picks tomorrow, the Jets are not done making moves. I would love to see them trade one of those and try to bring in a little depth piece for the receiving core or a depth piece for just some part of this team. I don't necessarily think they need to draft with all four of those picks. Maybe they trade back. But the most impressive thing about all of this today is that the Jets got a wide receiver who was a playmaker. And that was the primal goal of this NFL draft. And now, it's my pleasure, my honor, to bring in my man, the Moose, Mark Melusis. And we're going to break down a little bit of the first round that happened a couple days ago. And he's also going to give you some thoughts on the Knicks-Sixers series, which, hey, if they don't watch out, that thing could devolve into something ugly. Ugly. But that's for the league to have to deal with. Not our problem. Here's my interview with the Moose. Mark Melusis, Picks 11, Sports Nation. My right?
Nightly, that's it. You got it, dude. What's Sports going Nation, on? Man. Work with you Sunday on the fan. What's good doing, brother? How are you?
That's my guy, the Moose, man. Even when I'm not sure, he always picks me up, bro. That's my guy. Hey, and if we do the Sundays together on the fan, man, and that's one of the best times to listen. So make sure you're tuned in every Sunday on the free Odyssey app or, 660 or 101.9. Moose is on at 9 a.m. Get on us, baby. All right, for Moose, let's get into this. My man, you were at the NFL draft two nights ago now for round one. And I think we thought there was going to be a little bit more happening, especially with the Giants potentially getting up to number three, getting Drake May, making, the quarterback of the future move. But instead, they stay humble. They sit back at six. They get their man in Malik Nabers. What's your first feel on this move by the New York Giants here? And how did it feel meeting Malik Nabers as well? What did you get off the vibe of him?
Oh, I think he's really talented. I mean, nice young man. I think he's, excited about the opportunity. I think I'm excited for Giant fans about what Nabers is going to bring to this team. I think the size, the speed, he's not the biggest wide receiver, but the speed and the toughness, the physicality, the fact that he plays through injuries, he's a good teammate. Very, very confident coming from, what has become wide receiver U when you're looking at LSU, Ja'Marr Chase, Justin Jefferson, Odell Beckham Jr. A number of talented LSU receivers are now all over the place in the National Football League. And I think Malik Nabers is a guy that some scouts thought he was maybe more talented or had a higher upside than Marvin Harrison Jr. We'll see how that plays out in the National Football League. But the Giants drafted a really quality player. I don't think there's any doubt. Joe Shane, before the draft, Zoo talked about the fact that he had that he had 15 first-round grades in this draft class. Nabers was clearly a guy that addresses a position of need. They needed a number one wide receiver. They needed a guy that could be that go-to number one guy. He wants the ball in his hands. He wants to be the guy that's drawing the double coverage. He has every confidence that he's going to get open. I think Giant fans are going to love him. And the vibe and the feel I got from him last night on Thursday night when I had an opportunity to interview him for Picks 11 was just an excitement level, certainly a nervous anticipation, but a very, very confident, very, very talented, dynamic playmaking wideout.
Now, he's going to be stepping into a big spot there. Saquon Barkley taking off. Giants needing a new playmaker, as you said. You think he's going to be able to withstand what's coming from New York, being a Southern kid, being an LSU guy? You think he's going to be able to take the bright lights and the criticism that's going to be coming his way with a, and sometimes it's going to be unrightful, So you think he's built for New York?
All that. I mean, I think there's an adjustment period, but let's also not forget, he's coming from playing in the SEC, and college football might not be, number one here in New York, but if you go down south and, you're at Alabama, Georgia, LSU, Mississippi State, Ole Miss, whatever it might be, you're playing big time Division I college football, there's a lot of focus on you. There's a lot of expectations. So I know it's different here in New York, but I would not be worried about that. I think he's a very, very goal-oriented kid. Whether he handles, we'll see what criticism comes his way, when it does come, for what reason that it comes. But I think the fear now is, do they have a quarterback to be able to get him the football? Is Daniel Jones going to be able to stay upright, need that offensive line to take a massive step forward, stay healthy in 2024? Nabers is going to make, whether it be the future with Daniel Jones, at least in 2024, we know DJ is going to be the starting quarterback week one. As long as that knee is healthy, he's going to make his job a lot easier.
Oh, you know it, bro. But between me and you, I don't think he's going to be catching passes from Daniel Jones for too much longer than one season, if that. But we'll leave it at that for now. We got to see how the tape plays out. On the other side of town, there's a lot, maybe not a lot, but some criticism coming at the feet of Joe Douglas, who instead of electing to take Brock Bowers or trade up and get Roma Dunze or, you know, potentially fall back and get another wide receiver, he goes with offensive tackle Olufashanu from Penn State and Moose. I just got to ask you right now, first feels for Olufashanu. Yeah.
Well, I've been saying it for a while, Zoo. I mean, I talked about it on Sundays. You and I have talked about it on the air, off the air. You know, I've been talking about the Jets needed to address the offensive line. They did in free agency, and they did via trade. They bring in Morgan Moses coming off a torn pec. Tyron Smith has been healthy, completely healthy in years for the Dallas Cowboys, and brought in Simpson at guard from the Baltimore Ravens. You have another guard in Elijah Vera Tucker that hasn't been healthy in 2 years either. So, you know, we all saw last year, we saw with the Giants, we saw with the Jets, it starts up front. Just ask Jim Harbaugh, the head coach of the Los Angeles Chargers, it starts up front. Like, we could all get distracted by the shiny pieces. And I understand it's a passing league and people want more and more weapons, but I've got a quarterback. Let's also not forget, like, I have a quarterback in Aaron Rodgers. Can we, like, keep it simple, stupid? Like, I've got a quarterback that makes everyone around him better, that understands how to orchestrate an offense, run an offense, make everyone around him better. I'll present to you the example of Alan Lazard. Look at Alan Lazard as a member of the Green Bay Packers with a healthy Aaron Rodgers. Look at Alan Lazard with a healthy Zach Wilson and a done-for-the-year Aaron Rodgers. And look at the year that Alan Lazard had last year with the Jets. So he's going to make guys around him better. Like, I wouldn't worry about playmakers or whether or not the Jets have enough dynamic playmakers on offense as long as Rodgers is healthy. The big key for Rodgers is staying healthy. I need a great offensive line. I need to learn from the failure of a year ago. I banked as an organization that Aaron Rodgers was going to stay healthy for the entirety of the year. My backup quarterback was Zach Wilson. I had no plan B. The Jets needed to go into this year with Aaron Rodgers back, with a plan B on the offensive line, just in case Smith doesn't stay healthy, just in case Moses doesn't stay healthy, just in case everything doesn't go according to plan across that offensive line. Now you bring in a guy that's a pure left tackle. So I think Bowers is going to be really good with the Vegas Raiders. I think there's every reason to believe that he's going to be dynamic. There's reports that Los Angeles Rams are going to draft him if the Raiders didn't. So it's not all that surprising that he went in the first round or that there was interest around him. The Jets reportedly tried to move up for Roma Dunze from the Washington Huskies. They couldn't do it, so therefore they address what was a glaring need and add what they hope to be a foundational piece, not only, you know, maybe beyond 2024 for years to come.
Oh, I agree with you 100% on that one, Moose. I got to be with it. I wanted them to trade back a little further. I guess nobody really had the appetite for it, but you know what? We'll take a nice little OT over there, because that's going to be very important in the years to come, as you said, especially this year with the injuries that could rear their ugly ass heads at us. But quickly, because I do want to talk to you about the Knicks before I let you go.
Yeah.
Just a letter grade on both teams for the first round.
Letter grade on the Knicks. I mean,
No. Letter grade on.
Oh,
on the Jets and Giants. My apologies.
Oh, I'm sorry. I apologize. Sometimes I'm slow to the draw. I give the Jets and the Giants. I think they both got players. I give them both an A. I mean, I really do. I think Neighbors is a tremendous playmaker, and I think the Jets made the smart move, learn from past failures, and add an offensive tackle and didn't succumb to the pressure of trying to add another weapon for Aaron Rodgers. So I think both of them deserve an A. I think both of them are going to be really good players. Obviously, one a little bit more flashier because he plays a more dynamic position at wide receiver, but doesn't take away from the importance of the left tackle, especially in today's day and age of the National Football League, how passing of a league it is.
Oh, preach it, Moose. Now, I know you didn't get a chance to watch the game live, but I know you've seen highlights. Yes. I know you've seen everything, I'm sure, out of the commentary around this game as well. Joel Embiid, Nick Nurse, I think more than anybody else, has become my least favorite person in the NBA. I just can't stand that man.
He complains. but he's effective. He's a good coach, though. I understand.
He's good. He's good. I don't think he's great, but he's good. But that's not the conversation here. I want to ask you your thoughts on where this series is going and what the hell is going on. I mean, I feel like the NBA has lost complete control of, like, this game from an officiating standpoint, and I'm not sure they can reel it in at this point. And if they do, what is this even going to look like? I'm lost.
Yeah, I mean, I think they've got to reel it in. I think through the first three games of this series, you could easily make the argument the Philadelphia 76ers should be leading the series 2-1. The Knicks are leading it 2-1 heading into game 4 Sunday afternoon down in Philadelphia. There's been a very loose whistle, which has been beneficial to both the Knicks and the 76ers in this series. So, you know, they haven't called everything. Listen, what Embiid did was he pushed the envelope. He went over the line. He was a little bit dirty. You know, the groin shots that he had to Hartenstein and Mitchell Robinson, pulling Robinson to the ground. You know, Robinson didn't play in the second half. Now, obviously, and we all know this, watching Mitchell, his body doesn't hold up. He's built like a chandelier, a very tall chandelier. But, you know, he's now in a walking boot. Who knows when we see Mitchell Robinson back on an NBA court again, because he's consistently and always hurt for the New York Knicks. Now, I think the NBA has got to grab hold of this series. I kind of like it because there's hatred between the two cities. There's clearly vitriol between the two teams. Embiid mocking Jalen Brunson toward the tail end of the game last night, or on Thursday night, I should say, down in Philadelphia. I thought it was intriguing as well. The Knicks have got a problem of containing Embiid and containing Tyrese Maxey. You know, they combined for 75 points in game 3. Embiid had 50, Maxey had 25 of the 125 points that they scored. That's an issue for the Knicks, and they're going to need Brunson, who dropped in 39, right, in game 3. They're going to need Jalen Brunson to be his dominant self if this team is going to survive this series against the Philadelphia 76ers, because even though it's a 2-7 matchup, and kind of after the first game, I thought it was not a matter of if, but when, the Philadelphia 76ers have played some really good basketball. You knew they were going to get a favorable whistle in game 3, and Joel Embiid took advantage of that and got away with some things that easily he could have been kicked out of the game for.
Oh, without a doubt. And it's shocking, but at the same time, it's not surprising that that happens. And when he gets back here for game 5, it's going to be ugly. It's going to be ugly at the Garden, bro. I'm going to tell you that right now.
Oh, but, well, especially if the series is tied up at 2 games apiece. The next game decides where this series goes. If the Knicks win game 4 Sunday and they're up 3-1 coming back home, you feel really good. If that series is tied 2 games apiece going back to New York for a game 5, well, then there's going to be a lot of Knicks fans with a lot of flop sweat across the tri-state area.
Oh, yeah. And real quick here, before you get out of here, what do you think Sunday looks like? What do you like in terms of, you think this is a chippy game? You think we get a potential, not a fight because we don't get fights in the NBA, but a little, you know, skirmish, and well, who comes out on top?
You know, Zoo, that's the interesting thing. I was thinking about this when I was flying back from Detroit and reading some stuff on the plane. I think the Knicks have got to stay true to themselves. I think the 76ers are trying to bait them into something, and I don't think the Knicks can bite. And I don't think, if they don't bite, I think the Knicks are going to bounce back and win game 4 and come back to the Garden up 3-1. If they do bite, I think this series is going to be tied up at 2 games apiece. You're right, there's not going to be any fights. There's not going to be a brawl. There's not going to be anything like that. But the Knicks now all of a sudden can't go into that game thinking about game 3 and what Embiid did and trying to get a little bit of, their pound of flesh back. They can't think about that. They've got to go out there and play their game and come away with a victory and know and think about what they need to do in order to be successful. They can't have Embiid go for 50. They can't have Maxey go for 35+. They've got to do one of them can go off. Both of them can't be dominant forces, and that's what you've seen for the first 3 games of this series. And let's be honest, Embiid, how much you want to rip him after, you know, what he was doing in game 3, he has been unbelievable. Like, if you doubted the brilliance of Joel Embiid, look at what he's doing on one healthy knee in this series. I mean, it is and dealing with Bell's palsy as well. It's utterly remarkable what Joel Embiid is doing, but I think there's going to be some. I think it's going to be a little chippy. I don't think there's going to be any fights, but I don't think the Knicks can be baited by the Philadelphia 76ers. If they don't, I think they come back to the Garden up 3-1. I think they win on Sunday.
Ooh, baby, I like that, Moose. I like that, Moose, and I love you, brother. Thank you for coming on. Appreciate the time. Catch Moose, as I said, on Picks 11, Sports Nation nightly, and with me on Sundays. I produce, of course, his beautiful program that we have at 9 a.m. every Sunday morning on The Fan. Tune into that. Appreciate you, brother.
Love you, Zoo. I'm glad we were able to get this done, man.
My thanks to the Moose, man. My brother, Mark Malusis. Always an honor to talk to him. Always a pleasure to have him on the podcast and just in my life in general. That's my guy. And I thank you guys for being in my life. And I thank you guys for subscribing and following and listening and leaving 5-star ratings and tweeting at me at ZooBeard77 on the Twitter machine. You guys are the absolute best. Thank you all. All the love on a beautiful Saturday. Enjoy it. Get all of your vitamin C from the sun. Get all of your drinks in you and just spread some love. You know, just spread some love today. It's a beautiful day, people. I shall talk to you tomorrow. But for now, I must bid you adieu. Peace.